Hello and welcome to High and Low, a Kurosawa podcast. This is episode 8. Yeah, episode 8. And with you, as always, is me, the one host, Spencer. And Joel's here, too.
Yeah, I'm here. Everybody, I'm here. Don't worry.
Yeah. J-Dog is here, and I think there's a guest, maybe?
Yeah, we got a good guest. Come on.
Am I here? Am I?
Are you?
Am I?
Yay, it's Gina.
Yay, it's me.
Yeah. I listen to Gina, at least once a week. How often is Kill by Kill released?
Every 2 weeks,
I get to hear you and Patrick talk about it, and it is so good.
Thank you so much.
It makes the Friday 13th movies seem watchable to me.
Most of them are. The one we're talking about right now is not in the slightest.
But Roy...
Roy!
I've seen the first three, and I was like, I don't need to see any more.
Oh, you should really need to see Jason Goes to Hell, because it is insane, and cuckoo, and wacky, and delightfully bonkers.
And does he take Manhattan, or is that just a misnomer?
No, yes or no, he does visit Manhattan, but most of the havoc he wreaks is on a cruise ship.
Oh, yeah. Does he meet the Muppets in Manhattan?
No, regrettably not.
Oh, that would be pretty cool.
He does meet some punkers and some gangs, and you can't see me, but I'm making big air quotes, because this is the late 80s, and New York was horrible and terrible, and there were chuds everywhere, so, you know, appropriately, the big city is about as scary as a masked serial killer is. That's the joke. Nobody's really scared of him.
Yeah, everybody just walks by him like it's no big deal, because that's what New Yorkers do. I saw Godzilla.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, the good one with Matthew Broderick.
Yes, absolutely. With that fantastic Puff Daddy theme song.
His name is Sean Combs.
I think he was Puff Daddy. I think he was Puff Daddy back then.
He was definitely Puff Daddy, yeah.
That's a fucking stupid name.
Except pre-J-Lo, so, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so this episode we're talking about the second part of our 1960 pairing, Jokoku, which translates to either hell or the sinners from hell.
Or everybody dies.
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of translations. I don't know what's real and what isn't.
Well, we should get into, I'm sorry, Gina, I didn't mean to.
I was just going to say that everybody dies would probably be the most accurate translation. I mean, if you're going by what actually happens in this movie.
Yeah, makes sense.
I think the secondary title should be, Shiro!
Harume!
Yeah. All right, so... Joel, do you want to try to synopsize this movie about Shiro?
Sure. Let me just say that, first off, the things that this has in common with the Bad Sleep Well are that somebody gets hit by a vehicle.
Uh-huh.
Somebody falls, although we don't actually see that in the Bad Sleep Well, but it's insinuated that somebody fell from a great height. And the main character... is really pensive most of the time.
Well, I put both movies are driven by guilt, where Jigoku is about a guy who feels guilty, and he's paralyzed and won't do anything about it, and Bad Sleep Well, he feels guilt, but he does something about it.
Yeah.
So they're opposite movies in that regard. And that's kind of it. Besides, they're very grim and humorless.
Yeah, those are good words to describe Jigoku.
I mean, was Jigoku humorless? Because I was laughing my ass off.
I think it's meant to be like a Christopher Nolan, no jokes allowed type thing.
I will remind you that in Inception, there's that part where Joseph Gordon-Levitt plants a smooch on what's-her-name, and then he's like, it was worth a shot.
Okay, there's one joke.
I was raffling, I tell you.
I saw it in theaters and left early, and I don't regret it.
Oh, man, I loved it so much. You're crazy.
My dad lost his key somewhere. I had to pick him up.
Oh, okay. Well, that's I understand that. There's another part to this story. Yeah. That was the day I was elected president. Okay. So here's a synopsis for Jigoku, a.k.a. The Sinners of Hell. I think that it has a different other title as well. Our hero, and I just, you know, hero is just an easy way to say the lead character in this movie.
Our protagonist.
Yeah, our protagonist, Shiro.
He's our hero.
Is a guy who is engaged to a girl, and he has a friend who is a big, crazy weirdo like the devil.
Yeah, I took notes, and in capital letters, I put is Tamara the devil? 3 question marks.
I did that too. I thought he was a demon the whole time.
I guess he sort of is like a lesser demon because he sold his soul for apparently the ability to be able to see the worst thing that everybody has done, which that doesn't seem like a very fun ability to have. It reminds me of, I'm sure at least one of you has seen Unbreakable. And there's a pretty famous scene where he's walking through a train station and he's touching people and is able to see the worst thing they've ever done. Like one person committed like a hate crime, another one committed date rape, and it's just like, wow, that's a really shitty superpower to have. I don't think that would be worth selling your soul to the devil for.
Well, Tamura is a shitty person.
Yeah, but was he before that?
I feel like he is always a shitty person. And I thought, were they roommates?
No, I think they're just I think they're just classmates.
I thought they, because he was in his house, I thought they were roommates.
I think he just kind of has the ability to just kind of show up, which is what made me think he had some sort of supernatural ability.
He's a night crawler.
Yeah, he bamfs in there. He's a total Jake Gyllenhaal. He just shows up all of a sudden with a camera in your face. So anyways, Shiro and Tamura get into a car, they drive along, and this drunk asshole walks right in front of the car. Now, this is painted out to be that, obviously, they run into this guy, and he's dying in the street, going like, you assholes, you hit me, you know, and we're supposed to... Right, oh yes, there's some creepy lady who just happened to be peeking around the corner right there.
Yeah, his mama.
And I think we're supposed to be like, oh my gosh, they hit a guy. They're terrible. Except for this guy. This drunk guy was walking in the middle of the street. In California, I believe they'd probably get away with it.
Yeah, and you're supposed to, for some reason, because Shiro asked Tamura to take a shortcut, that somehow this means that Shiro is responsible for the guy getting hit by the car, which I'm not really... I don't really understand that. I mean, if Shiro has to feel guilty about anything, it would be not calling the cops. But I don't think that he is responsible for the guy's death, and I'm not sure why the movie poses as though he is. I was a little... Just like I'm not really sure how he was supposed to be responsible for... Spoiler, his girlfriend also ends up dying in a car-related accident. I'm not really sure how that's supposed to be his fault either.
It's kind of like a Final Destination thing.
I guess.
Oh, yeah. Because he avoided death, everybody's dying around him? Yeah, it makes sense.
And it feels like Final Destination takes up the element of the devil, and it's just like random shit, where this one's like, oh, the devil's involved.
I mean, Shiro has a lot less to feel guilty about than everybody else at that nursing home. Let's face it.
Oh my gosh, everybody in this movie is scum, with the exception of a few people.
Like Yukiko, what was her duplicate? The name just slipped out of my head.
Shimuzu?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, and they're like the only like really pure characters. But I mean, Shiro's not that bad of a guy. I can't figure out why he is so racked with guilt when he hasn't done a fraction of what some of the other people have done.
Yeah. It comes off as like survivor's guilt or something like that. Like, if I hadn't done this, this wouldn't have happened, which is a common feeling. Like, everyone can relate to that particular thing, but not to the point where, like, I've got blood on my hands.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, well, this is jumping ahead a little bit, but the script was kind of, not rushed, but it didn't get that many passes because they kind of had to quickly make a movie.
Yeah, need that time, that summertime horror.
Yeah, but, like, it didn't get, it wasn't very thought out, is what I'm saying.
I kind of shows. Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. It's all up there on the screen, so. Anyways, Tamora drives away. So basically the real crime is it was a hit and run. They should have called the police or something like that. But Shiro is like, we need to go confess. And Tamora, being the devil, says no. In fact, if you tell anyone, I'm just going to make your life a living hell. So we just need to keep this to ourselves. Everything's going to be fine. Shiro is racked with guilt. And so he goes and picks up his fiance, Yukiko. And she says, I'm feeling kind of weird about this. I think we should walk over to my parents' house if that's okay. And he's like, no, we need to take a taxi. Okay, it'll be faster. The practical part of me says, of course a taxi would be faster. The other part says, I just watched this movie. I know what's going to happen. So naturally, because Shiro chose to take force Yukiko into a taxi, the taxi driver somehow crashes, killing himself and Yukiko in the car.
It's a pretty low-impact crash, and yet somehow it kills both the taxi driver and Yukiko, even though Shiro isn't hurt at all.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he doesn't have a bruise on him.
Like he literally just kind of drives a little bit into a telephone pole, and that's about it.
Yeah, he was going like 300 miles per hour, I guess. I don't know. Because that car is messed up, even though. Got blood all over his head. While this whole horrible thing is going on, as we said, the mother of the first victim, that's what I'm going to call him, the guy who got hit, planning with the victim's lover to get revenge, because even though she didn't tell the police that she saw anybody, she definitely saw the face of the two drivers that drove away. So, so this person who, what is the character's name? Is it,
the mother or Yakuza?
No, the lover.
Yoko. Oh. Yoko is the,
Yoko.
Yeah, she's like a stripper. Or like a dancer. She's definitely like some sort of
they meet
saucy dancer.
Yeah, they meet at the strip club.
Working at one of those bars where they like sit with the customers and they buy them drinks. And yeah, she goes home. It's funny. She goes home with Shiro, and Shiro is like out of his mind in guilt and sadness. Wakes up next to him, says, "Hey, here's my number. Call me later," or something like that. And then later takes a picture to him. To the first victim's mom is like, yeah, that's the guy. So I guess it seemed like she was purposely sleeping with him because she thought that he might be one of the guys. But later she says, I was in love with you. And then I realized who you were.
Yeah, that's another indicator that there was a pretty large segment of this script either cut out or not developed.
Yeah, it's.
Yeah, yeah. At this point, we'll do the count. We're at three deaths. First guy run over by a car. Second and third person died in that cab accident. So Shiro is just hanging out at home, waiting to get murdered or something like that. when he gets a letter from some other place that says, "Come quickly, your mother is dying. She's on her deathbed."
It's like a nurse. It's like a nursing home, but yet there's like sort of younger people staying there too, and I guess like a convalescent center.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I work at a assisted living home, and you don't have to be old to live there. It just needs to be, you need some sort of medical condition that kind of makes it hard for you to live on your own.
Hmm. So it's like Harold in Twin Peaks. You know, he's taking care of the orchids, but people have to bring him meals on wheels.
Yeah, like someone like that could feasibly live in a assist a living home.
Absolutely. Hmm.
But yeah, but rent there. Never mind.
Rent?
I don't want to talk. I want to talk about business.
Do they serve fish heads? That's what I want to know.
No.
Okay. Well, but I rent think is you're
like $10,000 a month where I work.
It's that's how much it costs to live where I live.
So you're not getting those Medicaid grannies on there, are you?
It's mostly Medicaid, apparently.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully Medicaid's... Yeah, I won't talk about that.
Let's not get political.
Nope.
So what I'm saying is, if the senators would just... No, okay. So Shiro goes over there by train. He gets... sees his, you know, this old folks home, this convalescent home. Happens to be owned by his father and mother. And they're coming up on their 10th anniversary, so there's kind of a celebration planned, even though there's more than one person dying on the premises. One of is his mother, and one of them is just, I think, a patient who is
that's a random old man.
Yeah.
I don't think he's given a name.
No. I think it's just another situation to show that the doctor for the facility is kind of incompetent. Doesn't really help anybody. So Shiro is there, you know, hanging out with his mom, and he finds out that his dad has another woman who's just, like, moved in, just straight up.
She's like the, other than Tamura, she's, like, the worst character in this movie.
Yeah, she totally wants her stepson more than his dad.
Yeah, and she does nothing but kind of this weird sort of cackling most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is the point where Joel had to turn off the movie for a day because he found every single character annoying.
Hmm. I liked Shiro.
Yeah, Shiro's fine, but he doesn't. You know, he doesn't really do anything. I didn't know why
he would give such a hard time.
Mm.
The spirit of death.
I feel like I would be in Shiro's situation. I would be so guilty about things that were completely out of my control. Yeah. Although I would have probably strangled Tamura.
Oh no, he's
so,
a demon.
There'd be four deaths on my hands. So, besides the his father, his dying mother, this woman who's moved in with his father, there's also an artist who's there, and he's painting a gigantic picture of hell. And he's a drunkard, so he's got wild hair and is dressed kind of, you know, whatever. But he has a daughter.
You're saying he's painting a picture of hell and the movie's called Hell?
No.
Do you think they're connected?
I don't think so.
Okay. Sorry.
I mean, he's painting it for a temple, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Coincidence.
Yes. I think.
Prisonplanet.org.
No, don't send any of our listeners there. Listen, I got a bad review recently for being too much of a SJW, so be careful.
Catch from bed with the painter.
Mm-hmm. But anyways, this painter has a lovely looking daughter who is almost exactly the same person as poor RIP Yukiko.
She is pretty much the same person. I mean, it's the same actress, yeah. And she's just wearing something that looks like a nurse's uniform instead.
It's my
like
God.
Twin Peaks thing with Laura Palmer and the brunette cousin.
Yes, yeah, you're right. Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. Except for they weren't trying to mac on James, who's the worst actor. Okay, anyways. anyways, this is, you know, there's finally another nice person in this movie. We thought we were all out of them, but there's Sachiko. Who is thinks that Shiro's a real nice guy, but everybody is a total jerk whenever she tries to talk to Shiro, so she immediately has to leave the room. Shiro's mother passes away, and so does the other ailing patient from the convalescent home, so that puts our kill count up to 5. And Shiro is walking along the train tracks, but I believe before she passes away, no, this is afterwards. He's walking along the train tracks wearing his shoes, and this train rushes by, and for some reason Sashiko thinks that he was hit by a train, even though I don't think the audience would have thought that. But yes, she shows obvious concern for him, and then once again, weirdo lady shows up. What is her name? Her name is...
Oh, the mistress?
Yes, what is the mistress's name?
That's,
I never go, heard
that.
There it is, Kuniko. Or Kunoko.
Kunoko, yeah.
Kinuko. Anyways, she keeps showing up. She is like the, pardon the phrase, she's a total cock blocker.
I don't know, because she's trying to get Shiro's.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I don't know. She's like, instead of being like a secrets demon, she's like a sex demon.
Fine. She's a seemingly appropriate relationship blocker. It turns out that is not an appropriate later relationship, but we don't find that out till later. Eventually, what is, I keep forgetting everybody's name. Sorry. Yukiko's parents show up, and they're just really, I think they're actually being super nice. They just wanted to be there for Shiro.
Well, yeah, but they're also... They're also distraught. I mean, Yukiko's mom pretty much after a certain point has no dialogue except occasionally shrieking Yukiko's name.
Right.
She is a woman.
Thank you, pardon? I did not come here to have my gender insulted. Thank you very much.
Am I right, J-Dog?
I didn't come here to get my gender insulted either, Spencer. Excuse me.
I thought we were bros. We share a film truck account.
That's don't say that. They're gonna cancel my account.
I'll cut.
Anyways, yeah. So when Yukiko's mother sees Sashiko, she's like immediately like Yukiko, because as you said, they're the same actress. So everyone's remarking how they look the same and everything like that. And the devil also shows up again.
Yeah, he teleports there.
Yeah, Temora. Just, how did you track me down? That's the person who interrupts the train conversation. I forgot about that. And he's
red in that scene, if you notice. Yeah.
Oh.
A whole lot wearing red from the bad people.
You know what that means.
He's wearing a bold, trendy color for the fall season.
That's right.
I thought it means he's a blood. I just watched a Spike Lee movie with bloods in it, so I got gang life on my mind. Hashtag thug life.
Is that what Red Hook Summer is about?
There are some bloods in it.
Oh.
Played by alleged rapist Nate Parker.
Oh, yeah.
Allegedly.
I said alleged.
He did say
I know, I'm just kidding.
But the woman did kill herself, so...
I see.
Well, you know what?
This has been a fantastic.
I was going to say. Anyway, let's keep talking about the movie where everybody dies and goes to hell.
Fits right into this movie, practically. So Shiro decides to take a nice little walk. First, there is a crazy celebration party type going on before the actual celebration party, wherein...
Everybody's for a nursing home or a convalescent center or whatever it's supposed to be. Nobody's particularly respectful about noise or looking after the patients. I'm not familiar with Japanese culture terribly, but I found it a little odd that these patients just kind of laid out on mats on the floor and none of them look very comfortable and nobody's really. And we find out because again, almost every character in this movie, except for Yukiko and Sachiko, are pretty much amoral and you do nothing. Everything that they do negatively impacts someone else. We find out that the doctor who works at the clinic is misdiagnosing the patients. We find out that Shiro's father, in addition to openly carrying on with a mistress while his wife is dying in front of him, is also cutting corners on the nursing home. So everybody is just a wonderful human being who is going to enjoy a long afterlife in paradise. Oh, wait. Mm-hmm. Did I say paradise? I mean, they're all dying, going to hell.
Something like, yeah. Buddhist hell.
We should clarify.
Yes, which looks like a heavy metal album cover.
Oh, yeah, it did.
Yeah, it's very radical. So there's just so much that goes on in this section before it actually does go crazy, because we have to set up for basically everyone to die. A bunch of poisoned fish run down the river, but the fisherman catches them and sells them to the convalescent home anyways, because, hey, we're not going to eat them. We're going to feed them to our patients. So that's fine. Whatever. Cheap fish. There is a police detective who, I don't know why he's there, but he's just hanging out.
Yeah, and the journalist is hanging out there, too, for some reason.
Right, well, he's missing, he's there to report.
He's missing an eye for a reason that I don't think was ever actually explained.
No.
Looks cool.
Yeah.
It does look cool.
It's one of those things that you do in an actor's workshop. Like, I think my character is missing an eye.
Sure, why not go for it?
Yeah, okay, yeah, use that. But Shiro decides he's going to go back to Tokyo because this is just another miserable place surrounded by miserable people. And he decides to take a long walk off a short pier. No, wait, onto a bridge that is overhanging two cliffs. It looks like the bridge at the end of Temple of Doom.
I'm going to say a bridge on the River Kwai.
Looks like a bridge on the river. I haven't seen that movie.
I haven't either.
Okay.
It just sounds like never mind.
Sounds like it's looks like the bridge to Terabithia. And as he's going across, he sees, or that's right, he got a note from somebody who said, "Shiro, I have been thinking about you. Come meet me on a bridge over a huge cliff. See you soon, baby cakes."
And it's, wait for it, it's Yoko. Not Ono, Yoko.
And she's wearing a red. So you know something's up.
Yeah, M. Night Shyamalan. Red means, if you see red, it means something symbolic. It means some shit. Mm-hmm. It means some shit's about to go down. And
that's where he got it
and
from.
Shit,
yeah.
Does go down. Yoko goes down off the bridge.
And yeah, pretty comically.
It's good dummy work.
Is it
when it hits the rocks? That was pretty. That was good dummy work.
Yeah, I mean, she basically, it's, you know, she holds a gun to Shiro and she's like, "I figured out who you are and I'm gonna kill you for revenge." And he's like, "Okay, go ahead." And it kind of seems like he's gonna crawl out from under the bridge himself, you know, just commit suicide right there. Except she somehow slips and yeah, she just falls, you know,
she
however.
Hits a couple rocks on the way down.
Mm hmm.
Yeah, it's fairly brutal. I mean, this movie gets a lot more brutal, but that's fairly brutal.
Yeah, yeah. That was genuinely, like, unnerving to me. Just like when it hits the rocks and you can tell they probably spent a lot of money making sure the dummy looks good.
Yeah.
Weighted like a human should be.
Well, you spent a lot of time thinking about dummies. I don't know. No. So that's six.
You don't see good dummy work like that usually.
Six deaths so far. And then Tamura shows up and he's like, "Hey, it all worked out. I knew it was..." He literally says, "I knew it was going to work out this way."
Because he's a demon.
And you're like, "Screw you, dude." And you're just like, "I hope Tamura, like, goes off this bridge." Oh, wait.
Minute later, he falls off.
They wrestle with the gun and he gets shot and then he also falls. Although you don't see his impact, so I was thinking, are they trying to be mysterious about it? I guess they did.
So the death count is at seven?
That's seven.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I'm counting the cab driver, so.
Yeah, the cab driver must just ascend directly to heaven. He must have been, like, an undercover priest or something like that, because we don't hear from him again.
I haven't been charging people for cab rides all day. Oh, and there's a couple to pick up. This will make me really happy. So Shiro, instead of doing what I think most of us would have done at that point, throw himself also off the bridge, decides to go back home. And there's a huge celebration going on where all of the convalescent patients are all enjoying sake and fish, you know, fish with a head attached. Thank goodness. They never get fish with head attached.
They're partying pretty hardy for being a bunch of, you know, sick old people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to take those parties where you can get them when you're in that condition.
Could be your last one.
Exactly.
And funny you should say that. Because it is their last one.
What?
Everyone dies, and I think the painter hangs himself.
That's not till the very end, though.
Yeah, it's not revealed till the end yet.
I thought that was before the hell part.
No. It was
because he's just suddenly in hell, and it's like, how did he get there? Oh wait.
Tamara shows up and starts doing the whole, you know. I know a terrible thing you did. I know a terrible thing you did. I know a terrible thing you did. And probably the one that's most affecting is when he tells Yukiko's father, was it that he stole a canteen from one of his...
one of his, like, a soldier buddies in World War II.
Which is...
The professor.
Yeah, and then so he's so distraught over that, and the mother is so distraught over Yukiko's death, that they just go and throw themselves in front of a train together. So that's 8 and 9.
Yep, 8 and 9. So Shiro is not having this. He's obviously crazy, or distraught, so he's off in some room just, like, lying drunk by himself. Yoko, of course, takes this opportunity to see if she can get all over him and get her way to Tokyo. And in comes Shiro's father, who immediately suspects that they were doing the hanky-panky. And so there's a wrestling match between Yoko and Shiro's father, which results with Yoko falling down some stairs, I guess? I don't know.
I think so, yeah.
And there's her dead body. Now, numero 10. It's just, this movie hasn't been going on for, you know, 100 minutes. It's not like one death per 10. It's like, wow.
Yeah, these people are these people are being knocked over like bowling pins.
Mm-hmm.
It's a turkey.
And you know, while this is happening, the first guy who got run over in the car, the guy who's I think they call him like Tiger or something like that.
Yeah, Tiger.
His mother shows up and she's like, "Hey, everybody, I got some delicious sake here or wine or something." And they're like, "Oh, how do we know it's not poison?" She's like, "Don't worry, I'll drink some too." So she pours everybody a glass. They cheers. They all drink. And guess what? She lied.
Now, here's a question. Why would she do that? Why would she poison everybody?
That's a good question.
I mean, this is not something that makes, and I ask this because as I'm, we're in the middle of Friday the 13th part 5, which has a very muddled sort of revenge plot attached to it. Not in the same way that, well, sort of similar to the first one, but the person is seeking revenge mostly on the wrong people for a loved one's death. And I am not sure why she just doesn't, you know, quietly slip in, murder Shiro, and then leave and go about the rest of her life. No, she comes in and just poisons a bunch of strangers, which I don't, again, I'm wondering, is this something that was left out of the script, or did the screenwriter think that they needed to do a little more work in emphasizing how evil a character this person is? I was a little puzzled by that.
I think it was just for a body count and nothing else. Because, like, the studio that made the movie was...
What's that? What's that, puppy?
Freya parked.
Okay.
A special guest appearance by Freya.
The studio that made it made, like, the kind of a schlockier B movies that were bloody and violent. So I think it was just them being like, we should have more death in the movie.
We just need a few more bodies laying about.
I mean, she's cray cray. That's all we know for sure.
Yeah, I guess that's a reasonable explanation. But anyway, this is like up to now. We're up to like 20 or so at this point.
Yeah. There's not. I don't even remember how many people she takes out there, but everybody drinks it. Everybody goes down except for Shiro, who is just like shocked to see all these people dying. But he's even more shocked when Tamura magically shows up looking like a zombie ghost man and strangles him. Or no, he starts to strangle Tamura, which we were like, thank God, it's about time you start doing that. And then the mother goes, ah, I know it was you who did it, and she's strangling him. So it's a three-way strangle situation here. Anyways. And then everything goes crazy.
It's David Carradine wet dream.
That is a terrible thing to say.
He's been dead for like 10 years. It's okay.
Oh, okay. Take that, David Carradine and his estate.
Don't sue me, Keith Carradine. And go sue John Carradine.
What about David Carradine? Not they do. There's another Carradine.
Martha Plimpton.
Oh, right. And there's also Robert Carradine. He could sue you.
Martha, I like that sitcom you did with Kate McCucci in it.
Yeah, what about Jim Carrey? Whatever happened to that guy? Okay. Anyways, this is where the movie ends. Everybody's dead.
Yeah.
So, that was, what'd you guys think of this movie? That was weird.
There's like 40 minutes left.
What are you talking about?
They go to hell.
I just turned it off. I assumed it was over.
Unlike a Friday 13th part, whatever, they actually go to hell on this one.
No, he went to hell in that one too. Just
for like 40 minutes.
It was no, and it wasn't nearly as elaborate as this version of hell.
I'm sure Freddy went to hell at some point too, but this is legit.
Where there's like hands and feet coming out of the ground, and then there's like a room that's full of broken glass, and then there's like really all these different themed rooms. It's a little bit like a kind of satanic Disney world.
Yeah.
Yeah, every variety.
Well,
you just roll a dice. You're not going to like it.
How about the Yelp reviews are pretty bad?
They don't have Yelp there. They only have MySpace.
They have Friendster.
Oh, no.
I don't know what that is.
Well, then you better best pray you don't go to hell. Don't tell someone to take a shortcut and then they accidentally run someone over.
I'm going to stop wearing red.
That's probably wise.
They only have one access to one website. It's Hamster Dance, and it's always at full volume. Okay. Yeah, so Shiro goes to hell the final Friday. And there he is approached by many different ghosts. Mostly it's Tamura being like, hey, what's up, dude? This is going to suck, but you know what? At least we're still friends. he's being really chummy.
At least we have each other.
Mm-hmm. Let's get together. Yeah. No. But Shiro is judged by the Lord of Hell, Lord Enma.
Which is not Tamura. I was surprised. I was pretty ready for him to be revealed as the devil himself. And
King Enma was really creepy.
And he says, yeah. He was pretty effective.
Yeah, that the makeup and like the effect of him having a giant head in the corner.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. The special effects of this movie, A+.
Yeah, not bad. Yeah. Not bad for the time period, not in the slightest. That scene when who was the one that got his was that Shiro's father that got his skin ripped off? That was pretty grody.
Yeah.
That was particularly for that time period. I was like,
it was like a Herschel Gordon Lewis scene, but actually good.
Yeah, I mean, it was
unlike
it was,
his shit movies.
It was
there. I said Herschel Gordon Lewis is overrated.
You're gonna get sued by the Herschel Gordon Lewis estate.
Bloodfeast is fucking garbage. Don't watch it.
I think he's rated at exactly where he's supposed to be rated.
Yeah, terrible.
That's the best movie I've ever seen. No, I haven't seen any. I haven't seen Wizard of Gore or anything, so I don't know. Listen, your opinion is suspect.
Okay.
You haven't even watched Take Aim at the Police Van yet. Shiro is judged, and he's basically told, yeah, you're going to have to go through all this hell stuff, and that's all there is to it. And we see different sections of hell, like, that are appropriate for people's particular sins. Like, the first section is basically... Like
different realms of Buddhist hell.
Yeah, like, there's people being boiled, there's people being, with, like, swords stuck through their heads, there's a... Mm-hmm. I think the mistress, like, gets her body, like, torn away from her head, which is also a pretty good effect.
Yeah, that was a really good one.
And then, of course, the gimmick, the thrust of this is that they wake up and it happens all over again. So it's not, they're just doomed to repeat this horrendous abuse again, laid upon their bodies for, you know, all of time and in space.
Yeah, there's this reoccurring shot of people getting their teeth smashed in, which is pretty gross. Yeah.
No teeth stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the weird, like, twist that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense and probably wasn't really necessary?
You mean him finding Yukiko and their baby?
No, that was fine. I'm talking about that Sachiko, who is a... not like literal twin of Yukiko, but she looks exactly like her, where Shiro is visited by his mother, who says, oh, well, Sachiko is actually your half-sister, who is the product of an affair with your father, and you're actually the son of this painter who raised Sachiko like he was her daughter. And I'm like,
of course.
I'm like, let me get out my flow chart here, because that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I didn't bother trying to make sense of it.
And I'm not sure what the overall point to it was.
Baby swap.
I mean,
incest is extreme, bro.
I mean, I guess, well, no, because they never actually got to that point.
True.
Tamura wanted them to get it on, I think, because he wanted something that would ensure that Shiro would remain in hell. But the mother stopped them just before they had their big underworld smooch. But I'm not really... I guess the only thing I could think of is that was the reason that you found out that was the reason why Shiro's mother was in hell, too. I don't know. I didn't know Buddhism was this brutal with people. They were, even when you express remorse over the sin you have committed, you're still... getting your skin ripped off, or getting, you know, boiled in lava, or getting your teeth knocked out over and over again.
Just living in darkness, you know. Yeah. Like,
but yeah, that didn't really make a lot of sense to me. So I kind of, all right, that's a thing. Let's move on.
If only Padme had been there to stop Luke and Leia. You know, those two are roasting to hell now.
Well,
man, that's all it takes. And the whole reason he's about to get smooching on with his sister in this movie is because Tamara is like, hey, man, check it out. She's right there. You know what you can do. Huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
And like I said, I'm pretty sure that's solely so he can say, yeah, she's your sister. You're burning, dude.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, no, I'm your bro. Just kidding. And he, after that point, after he fails at this particular thing, he starts to get punished really brutally. And the whole time he's yelling out for Shiro. And it's like, no, Shiro's not going to go save you, dude. Calm down.
But, no reason to save you.
I was really enjoying Tamura in hell because he got to go full nut bar. It reminded me of the way Jack Nicholson plays the Joker in the 89 Batman.
Oh, yeah.
When he's a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
The actor that played Tamura is definitely having a lot of fun with this role. And you know, whereas Shiro is just, you know, all agony and guilt. Tamura is just really just... He's having a ball. This is just the most fun to him.
Absolutely. And this whole 40-minute section of violence is the real purpose is to show us these terrible things that are happening to people, but they do try to tie in a story of, it turned out Yukiko was pregnant when she died in that car accident, which means that the body count was actually 4 when, okay, anyways, and, their baby is in hell with them now, and Shiro is on a mission to save this baby who's constantly floating away on a lotus leaf. And at the end, it's left ambiguous as to whether or not he saves the baby or not.
I kind of think he did.
Okay.
I prefer it, because otherwise, what was the... Yeah, you know, this is just a bleak, depressing movie that ended bleakly and depressingly.
I don't know. I mean, you know, there are some movies that certainly do end that particular way. This might have just been, like, way ahead of its time for that, but... Like, if they had any sort of moral code like they had in the U.S., maybe it was a thing where it's like, no, he doesn't get to go free. I mean, even though he didn't actually kill those people, he was a part of all their terrible deaths, so he has to be punished. He just won't be punished as bad as everybody else or something.
Well, according to the Wikipedia plot breakdown, when Sachiko and Yukiko at the end are calling to him, and they have looks like flower petals falling around them. Those are supposed to be. Now, I would have known this if I hadn't read the synopsis on Wikipedia. They're supposed to be lotus petals, which is a symbol of purity. So take that what you will. That maybe Sachiko and Yukiko were freed, because again, I don't know why they were in hell, other than unless Yukiko was in hell for the grievous sin of committing premarital sex.
Well, definitely.
Maybe they weren't in hell. Maybe it was like well, projections.
Maybe. That's possible.
See, Yukiko says that the reason why she's stacking stones is because that's the fate of any child who dies before her parents die. But by the time Shiro gets there, her parents are already dead.
But do you go to hell for that?
Well, yeah, of course.
Because that's not fair.
If I had children, I would tell them that every day. Don't die before me or you go to hell.
You have two kids already.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Pascal, Thomas, don't even think about it. But,
yeah, that's the end of the movie, pretty much. Yep. And then we learn the painter hangs himself.
Oh yeah, that too.
Because the screener is like, "Oh shit, we got one character left alive."
Yes, yeah. Because he was in hell at some point talking about, like, "Oh, if I'd known he was my son, I wouldn't have been such a drunkard." And like, dude, don't put that on Shiro.
I was gonna say it also, or his mom. It also, that's got done say much for Sachiko, the kid he actually raised. It's like, oh, okay, well. You stayed a drunkard for me, but if you'd had a son...
Hey, he wasn't going to be able to take care of me. That's why I knew I had to become a drunkard. Or it was okay to become a drunkard with you. Yeah. Spencer?
Yeah.
You okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I would hate to be responsible for your death.
No, I'm fine. So the hanging at the end movie reminds me of a weird thing that some residents told me a while ago.
Wait, what?
At work.
Okay.
Apparently, it was a thing in the... These are people in their 90s, so they were kids in the Great Depression. It was a thing for parents to take their kids to public executions, and multiple people reminisced about seeing hangings.
Old days.
And I didn't believe it, and then like five people are like, oh yeah, my parents took me to see hangings too. And it's like, why is that a family event?
Well, I knew that was something that people did. I didn't know it was in recent enough memory that people could be like, yeah, I saw that.
Because the olden days were terrible.
Yeah.
They didn't have the internet.
They did not have the internet. They did not have... No one took a single selfie. All they did was go watch people being hanged to death.
Well, actually, Princess Anastasia took a selfie. There's a picture of it.
She had a selfie stick and everything.
With the old timey camera, with her and her sister took a selfie.
Ye old.
They had to stand there for 2 hours.
Look it up. It's real.
Ye old Snapchat.
No, I believe it. Actually, the selfie was invented in the 1800s, but when somebody tried to show it off, they hung him, so that's why we didn't know anything about it.
Hanged.
Yeah, sorry. I hate saying hanged. Hanged.
That's the correct grammar.
It's a nasty word. Like, in my mouth. Like, the syllables don't feel right. It's not what you said the other day.
I know. Don't tell Sarah.
Sarah!
All right, so, were there any deaths that were particularly gruesome to you guys, or stuck out?
Well, not the deaths in particular, but like I said, a couple of those tortures in hell were pretty cringy.
Yeah.
Pretty cringy.
The thing that made me cringe in hell was when the one time that they showed somebody getting ear trauma, which I believe was Tamura. Everyone else had got either eye trauma or mouth trauma. For him, they showed him, you know, like an ear, and then they flash to the guy swinging the hammer, and then they come back and they show blood coming out of it. And I was like, no, that's the one kind of trauma I'm not up for, guys. Take my eyes, take my teeth. It's fine.
For me, it was the car, the first death with the car hit and run. Because I have witnessed a actual hit and run in my life, and so that's not funny, and I don't like seeing it in comedies or in movies at all.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, that's one that a lot of movies rely on, the funny, both comedies and horror movies, if someone is out of nowhere getting hit by a car.
And it's kind of funny if you've actually witnessed one.
That's the way I feel about car accidents in movies. Like, whenever they do that shot where you're watching the driver, but it's like the camera is in the driver's side window, you know that there's suddenly going to be a pair of headlights in the passenger side. And I hate that so much because I've been in that situation more than once.
Yeah, it's a cheap shock.
Yeah. Like, I didn't see him. He came up a hill or something magically. Yeah. You know what I'd like to do if it's okay with Gina? I'd like to do the kill by kill thing where we each say how we would like to go out based on what happens to these people.
Okay.
Oh.
Are we talking hell or hell torture or like the actual death?
No, the actual death because nobody wants the hell torture. Come on.
Okay. Mine's easy. Fall off a bridge on rocks. It's quick.
No, it's not. You're falling.
No, it's exactly.
I don't want to like drink poisoned food because then your stomach's gonna be all weird and painful.
Yeah.
If you fall and we hit, it's gonna be quick, and it's like, well, it's like a couple seconds at most.
I'm gonna have to go with the. Yukiko's parents jumping in front of a train because that's pretty spectacular. That's a dramatic way to go.
Well, yeah.
Well, I have a personal story about a friend who did that. So,
oh great,
man! you're just like an encyclopedia of depressing stories.
Well, a schoolmate from elementary school did that a couple years ago.
Well, I'm not really gonna do it.
I know, but.
This was a bad idea. I apologize.
I didn't realize this movie had so many triggers for me.
I knew someone who died of poisoned fish heads.
since the train one has been taken, not that that matters, but I think I will choose to spectacularly hang myself after I set my painting on fire, because that looked pretty cool.
Yeah, that was certainly a dramatic way to end the movie.
Mm-hmm. But everybody was dead, so they couldn't see his dramatic death. And
it was for him.
Me alone.
The ultimate art piece.
I can only do it once.
That's why it's so good.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's some serious performance art.
All right, so there's not much connection but to Bad Sleepwell, and we kind of discussed it.
Yeah.
Gian, do you have other movies from 1960 that are notable to you in any way?
Well, I figure there are quite a few classic films released this particular year. There was The Magnificent Seven. There was Two Women with Sophia Loren. But in keeping with the theme I came in with of horror movies, 1960 saw the release of Psycho.
Yeah,
that is true.
Yes. So would I say, are you asking me to compare and contrast, or am I just mentioning that you just happened to come out?
If you want to talk about it.
I mean, what do you, what stands out to you that makes Psycho in particularly special? Because, I mean, there are obvious answers, but I'd like to hear what you think.
Well, I mean, certainly, you know, being a fan of slasher movies, this is probably one of the first ones to really kind of create that sense of tension building up. I mean, the thing about Psycho is that a lot of people don't realize is that the pretty famous death scene, the shower scene, takes place relatively early in the movie, and then a lot of nothing happens between that and then like the last 15-20 minutes of the movie. And I think a lot of people are kind of surprised, maybe a little let down, but there are only two deaths in this entire movie. Now they're horrifying, and even if you know what's coming, it's still startling. But it's almost all just atmosphere and tension building and just a sense of foreboding. And obviously, when I saw it, you know, I saw it many years after it came out, and I already knew the twist of who was actually doing the murders. But it still packs a punch. The reveal still is pretty surprising and well done. And I think that, unfortunately, every slasher-style movie that has come after it it usually misses the mark in trying to be as good as Psycho. Some of them get a little close. None of them are quite are at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, Psycho in particular does a really good job of making you feel like you are witnessing a really kind of creepy, twisted situation. Like, even kind of in the beginning. No.
In the book, it's from the perspective of Norman Bates.
Three Musketeers?
Yeah, the book has no... it's all from... So it's... Also, you experience it yourself as the reader doing the creepy stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the movie does a really good job of that. Like,
I know writers who say that they like the book more than the movie.
Well, that's just a person being pretentious.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. You know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, even if it's wrong, as I always say.
So, Gina, are the sequels worth it? All like three or four sequels of Psycho that came like 30 years later?
Psycho 2, yes. Psycho 3, kind of in a sort of, but it's a little more kind of self-aware. Psycho 4, have I seen Psycho 4? I don't remember Psycho 4, so probably not. And then, yeah. And then there was a TV movie with a young Norman Bates, no relation to the TV show that's on currently.
Oh, I was gonna say, are you talking about the TV?
Yeah, show? No. This was quite a while ago. This was sometime in the 90s, I think. And then there's a TV show which I have not seen.
Oh, the Bates Motel.
Yeah, I have not watched that. It's one of those. It's there's a lot of extra added elements to it that I don't think, when I heard about it, I didn't think were necessary and caused me to lose my interest in it. And I think it also kind of tears a page from the American Horror Story playbook, where they kind of focus on the kind of, you know, sexualized aspects of it and on. It's like, no, thank you. I'm good. I mean, certainly it was implied in later movies that there was, you know, a hint of incest to Norman and Mrs. Bates' relationship in the TV show, from my understanding. That's a little more than hinted. But, so yeah, I'm like, I'm gonna take a hard pass on this.
Yeah.
All right, Joel, yeah. You got a movie?
You're forgetting a little movie starring Vincent D'Onofrio that also is called Psycho.
Psycho?
Psycho.
No, I've not heard this, and I am a big Vincent D'Onofrio fan.
It's the remake that Gus Van Sant.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Wait, D'Onofrio is in that?
No, Vince D'Onofrio is not in that.
It's okay, Vince I'm not Vaughn. Thinking. Vince Vaughn, sorry. Vince Vaughn. Yeah, you know,
Vince
I got
Vaughn.
My...
Yeah, Vince Vaughn.
I Vince Vaughn thought he was a dramatic
yeah, no,
actor.
I got my Vinces mixed up.
Oh, if Vince D'Onofrio had been in it, it would have been amazing.
That would have been great. Yeah, oh, man.
It would really scary.
Yeah, he might have been a little...
And Vince Vaughn was...
Yeah, not. No, he was... I mean, despite it being almost a shot-for-shot remake, although they had to make it had to make very clear in one scene that he was masturbating, which yeah, that's okay. We again, we could probably have surmised that for ourselves. Yeah, I totally blanked out on that. It not a good movie. It was a shame because it had other than Vince Vaughn, it had a pretty solid cast. It had William H. Macy. It had Viggo Mortensen, Julianne Moore.
Is Viggo Mortensen nude in it, like he is in most movies?
He might be. He is. Okay. He's Anne Heche's, who is the Janet Leigh. She was the Janet Leigh role. He is her boyfriend, lover, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it has Julianne Moore in it, who is.
Oh, I should see.
Yeah, that. I mean, she's good in it because William H. Macy's fine in it, but Vince Vaughn is a big old. Sore thumb that sticks out of that movie.
Like in every movie.
Pretty much, yeah.
I like him in that one movie. I don't know.
What's that one movie? Dodgeball?
No, I was thinking of Old School, actually. But
That movie is
close enough. Yeah. It's not a Vince Vaughn movie. It's, you know, it's the other people, too. You know, Will Ferrell and what's-his-face. A 1960 movie, if I had to pick out of the very few that I've seen, I'd have to go with this movie called Capo. That's K-A-P-O from 1960, obviously. And it is about a woman who a Jewish woman who is in one of the camps during World War II, and we slowly see her rise through the kind of the mini authority that, you know, other Jewish people have to basically police the camp because the Germans weren't going to do it themselves, I guess. So she becomes one of these capos, and at first we saw her, you know, desperate to live and making it by and being treated terribly. And eventually we see her evolve into one of these people who treats people terribly because she has authority. And I watched it a few years ago, so I don't really remember, you know, beat for beat what goes on, but I really enjoyed it at the time. Obviously, it's dealing with World War II and concentration camps. Or even death camps. I'm not sure which. So, it's not exactly a feel good movie, but really good. Capo.
Okay. Mine is When a Woman Ascends the Stairs. It's a Japanese movie. It stars Tatsuya Nakadai.
Never heard of him.
You keep doing this bit. You know who he is. He's a guy from Yojimbo with a pistol.
Wait, what?
The villain from Yojimbo, and he's a villain in Sanjuro.
Did we watch Yojimbo?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You know who Nakadai is? In this movie, he plays a protagonist who's actually a good person, and it's kind of jarring. But
okay, see, now I know you're making it up.
It's true.
All right.
So a movie's about a woman who basically has to become a prostitute, and I don't remember all that much. I just remember being disliking it and being like, why is Nakadai not being a villain? This is creepy. But it has Nakadai, so it's worth checking out.
He seems like a cool actor.
Yeah, and he's still alive. He's 84.
Mm.
And there's a Mario Bava flick, Black Sunday. I know some people really hate Italian horror. If you do, well, it's your opinion, and that's fine. But I like it. Well, I like Bava, and I like early Argento, and that's pretty much it. But any Mario Bava horror is good horror, in my opinion. It's worth watching.
I don't think I've seen any Italian horror, actually.
Not even Suspiria?
No, definitely not Suspiria.
Oh.
No.
If Bay of Blood or Hatchet for Honeymoon, those are fun ones.
Don't watch Suspiria if you have a thing against about eye injuries.
Oh yeah.
I mean, who doesn't have a thing against eye injuries?
I disrecommend that you watch that if that's the case.
Oh, don't watch Zombie either.
No, nobody should watch.
Even though Zombie has
nobody should watch Zombie.
Zombie too.
Garbage. Yeah, whatever. It's garbage, but there's a zombie versus shark fight.
That is reason to watch Zombie.
And then there's a really gratuitous shower scene that goes on for like 5 minutes too long, where it's like, this feels like softcore porn right now.
I saw something not too long ago that had surprising eye trauma, and I can't remember what it is. It was more shocking than like, oh, I got to turn this off. So I'm open to see, you know, to try anything to see where my limits lie. But I'm obviously not racing to see any eye trauma or anything like that. Can I mention some more 1960?
Yeah.
Okay, there's this really great Nakatasai, I think it's called Nakatasai, hold on, noir movie called Take Aim at the Police Van. it's directed by the recently departed Seijun Suzuki.
Who saw this coming?
And yeah, we're recording it on the day that it's revealed he died.
Nakatsu Noir, part of the Eclipse series, and... those were just a bunch of movies that, like, I freaking loved. I mean, like, I rarely give out a full, like, 10 out of 10 on movies. I gave this one a 10 out of 10. I think it is perfect. And it's just Japanese noir is so different, in my opinion, than what I've seen from American noir. And I don't know if it's just because when I started watching noir, which was only like 2 years ago, from the U.S., I had this idea of how it was supposed to be, and so the characters come off as terrible and I mean, just like not particularly likable characters. Like, I guess that's the way it is. That's noir for you. But there is an honesty and like goodness to these Nakatsu noir movies that. Like, you are actually rooting behind the character, even though he's ending up in, like, scummier and scummier situations to try to get to the bottom of whatever he's trying to get me, you know, trying to figure out. It reminds me of the movie that we watched here, Jigoku, except it's none of the characters are super annoying like they were in this movie. But it is, like... Take Aim at the Policeman, like an awesome good name. I also recommend one from a different year called A Colt is My Passport. A Colt being the type of gun that they use in the movie. It's another one of those. Hopefully we get to talk about that one if we do a movie from that year. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. Actually, I don't know if it is. I don't think so. No, it's somebody else.
Okay, I might check it out.
Another one is The Apartment. Came out this year. Billy Wilder.
Don't like him.
Shirley MacLaine.
That's a creepy movie.
Jack Lemmon.
No, it's a creepy movie. I have strong opinions about it, I think. CeCe Baxter is a terrible, terrible human. It's not a romantic movie. The first conversation he has with Shirley MacLaine is, I know where you live, I know your zip code, I know your social security number. And he holds a woman hostage in his home for killing herself so she doesn't tell the police.
Listen, I'm not saying that's a romantic movie. I'm saying that it's a good movie. It's totally different.
But it's not a good movie.
I mean, that's your opinion, man.
I know. He made one good movie, Sabrina.
That is not a good movie.
Yes, it is.
No, it is not. Sabrina?
Well, I'm going to go, guys, so it's been great.
She tries to kill herself.
That's what women do in all his movies.
Have you seen Sunset Boulevard?
I don't want to.
Okay, you know what? You are unhelpable. No one can help you. Gina, what do you think about The Apartment?
It's been a long time since I've seen it. I mean, I could certainly see where the concept would be is kind of iffy at minimum. I'm going to, you know, certainly I don't know that time has been kind to it. I do enjoy Shirley MacLaine. I do enjoy Jack Lemmon. I'm not sure I enjoy them in this movie as much as I enjoy them in other movies. But again, my caveat is I have not seen it in a very long time.
Yeah, it's got Fred McMurray being a total creepo, and I'm like used to him being like the Nutty Professor. Wasn't he the original?
He
no, not the Nutty.
He wasn't the Nutty Professor.
Yeah, you got it. There we go. Yeah, so that was enjoyable for me as an adult who only knew him from movies I watched as a kid. another one that I'll mention, since Spencer hates that movie, Elmer Gantry, starring Burt Lancaster. He plays kind of a con man. I mean, he's not kind of a con man. He's definitely a con man. He ends up going along with this traveling church group, and he just kind of weasels his way into it, you know, because his intention is to get money, but he's also kind of interested in the main preacher, who is a woman who is above reproach.
Woman is a preacher?
Yes.
That's crazy.
I know, that's what was crazy. But you know what? She was close to God.
Is it and a Western?
No, it isn't. No,
it looks like a Western.
I don't know exactly when it is.
Oh, it's thematic to the Jigoku. The tagline is, you're all sinners, you're all burned in hell.
Yeah, 1920 it says. So, that's like, anyways, that was really good.
1960 also saw the release of Village of the Damned.
I'm scared.
That's one I have always meant to see, but have not seen yet.
It is fun in a campy, corny sort of way. You know, if you're already uncomfortable around children, this will make you more so. Avoid the remake at all costs.
There's a remake?
There was a remake starring Mark Hamill and Christopher Reeve. Obviously, this was some years ago. But it's definitely an atmospheric movie. It's aware of its campiness. You've got all these little blonde Aryan looking children who have they basically show no emotions, show no affect, and nobody really seems to notice that there's anything wrong with them, which is puzzling and yet kind of amusing at the same time.
Spartacus is from this year too.
There was some big stuff this year.
Yeah, that's when Kubrick was still in Hollywood.
Yeah, he hadn't completely given up on the system yet.
Yeah.
Eyes without a face.
I haven't seen any of his Hollywood stuff yet. I'm kind of iffy on it.
Your favorite movie, Breathless.
Sure.
There was also The Magnificent Seven, which...
we covered that.
Yeah, that was remade. Did you see the remake, the one that came out this past year?
Nope.
I've heard good things. And it's got Vincent D'Onofrio in it. How bad could it be? It's got Vincent D'Onofrio in it.
But how's Vince Vaughn in it?
It does not.
No.
Apparently, in The Magnificent Seven, Will Turner plays a hero.
There are,
which is very unsettling to me.
There were several Elvis movies. One of them, a couple of them released 1 month after another. There was G.I. Blues in November, followed a little less than a month later by Flaming Star. Now, I'm not a learned expert in Elvis movies, but apparently in Flaming Star, he played a Native American. I'm sure that movie must have been just terrific.
I bet that ages well.
I'm sure.
Like
it
the
does.
Beginning of a 7-year itch, where there's a bunch of white people as Native Americans, and it's weird.
Yes, he is mixed. He is mixed white and Native in this. So, I'm sure it was fantastic.
That's like that Ombre movie where Paul Newman is like half white, half Native American. Like, sure you are, buddy. Blonde hair, blue eyes.
Yeah, they all look Aryan.
Yeah.
That was before they went ahead and started giving people contact lenses.
No DLP.
Like, was it Exodus that came out last year when Christian Bale played an Egyptian?
Oh, yeah. It was all white cast as a North African.
And Joel Edgerton and all of them with a high...
Australians who look like North Africans.
Noted Egyptian Joel Edgerton.
With the large budget marked for brown contact lenses.
Oh, wow.
Rather than just hiring, I don't know, Egyptian actors.
Yeah, because, they don't like movies there, only in Hollywood.
And what happens if the movie didn't make a nickel anyway? Whoops!
Yeah.
Alright, so, there's not... I didn't watch the making of... I didn't watch the extra stuff on Filmstruck for Jugoku, but I did find one thing that was interesting. The studio that made it, Shintoho.
Uh-huh.
If you remember, Joel, if you remember from the Kevin episode, Shin means new.
Yes.
And Shin Toho was founded by people who quit Toho in the late 40s.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah. And
that's interesting. Yeah. And they basically got exiled to only making B-type movies, huh?
Pretty much, because that's all they could afford to make. Mm-hmm. And they lasted from 49 to 61. And Jugoku was the last movie they made. After that, they filed for bankruptcy, and, well, that's history.
Yeah.
I don't imagine this movie was a big theater hit. A fun night out at the theater, everybody dies and goes to hell.
Well, from the documentary that I watched only about half of, they said that it was, like, a huge failure at the time, and that they were surprised that anyone was... recognizing it now when they were being interviewed is pretty funny.
Yeah, it's probably... I don't know
this. Like, oh, you want to talk about that movie? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Might so, have needs being Criterion.
No awesome review for this from any American contemporary?
I didn't bother checking.
Oh, no worries.
I doubt Bosley Crowther reviewed it.
Let's just assume they hated it.
Well, yeah. He probably hated it because he hates all Japanese movies that aren't Rashomon. But, there's a film critic I find old reviews from the 60s and 50s from who routinely hates all Japanese movies, pretty much. He thinks they're either terrible or mediocre. Like, he thinks Seven Samurai is just a Hollywood ripoff movie and nothing special.
Ah, okay.
So, stuff like that. And I didn't find any review from him, so...
So just this kind of passed under his radar, then?
I think it was such a failure, it never went to the U.S.
Yeah, I don't imagine that this is not really a go-see-this-in-the-theater type of movie. It's like...
Yeah, and like VHS and home stuff wasn't a thing
yet. This wasn't a date night type of movie.
Well, maybe for a cool chick. Like weird stuff.
According to that documentary, they released all their horror movies during the summer because you were chilled. You know, you got the chills from watching it, and that helped beat the summer heat. That's like pretty much literally what somebody says.
Is Halloween a thing in Japan?
Probably not. I mean, it might be by now. I mean, just because Western culture kind of bled its way. Into probably not at the time, not during the 60s, I don't think. I wouldn't say that this, I don't think the movie was scary. I mean, disturbing, unsettling, but I wouldn't say it was scary.
It's, I like it. I'd probably watch it again at some point.
When that second person fell off that bridge, I could not stop laughing. That's all I've got to say about that.
Yeah, it was a little bit like you're kind of doing a countdown of everybody just getting killed off.
Shiro, the only survivor. The rest of the world is all dead.
Yeah. All right. So that was the end of our 1960 pairing. And our next pairing of episodes will be from the year 1962. We're going back to the future. Not really. But with Sanjuro, which is a sort of sequel to Yojimbo. That's debatable. And Pitfall by Hiroshi Teshigahara. Joel, he made Face of Another.
Right.
Yep, and this movie has ghosts, and it's about labor unions, and it's really interesting, and I can't wait to watch it a second time.
Would you say it's as good as The Apartment?
I'd say it's better.
Oh, okay.
Because there are ghosts.
There's ghosts in The Apartment, too.
So
yeah, the ghost of quality.
The ghost of all those other people that killed themselves before, or what's her name, took over the elevator.
Shirley MacLaine had been a ghost. Would you have enjoyed it more?
No. Billy Wilder still wrote it. He was the Aaron Sorkin of his time.
Oh, now that's just... Come on now.
I mean, that's... Why don't you just...
Okay, I've only seen The Newsroom. I haven't seen West Wing or anything else. I watched the first season of The Newsroom and... was like, well, this is...
Well, you're not... That's garbage. You don't start on... You don't go to right to The Newsroom.
Well, yeah. It was just the easiest thing to access at the time, so I did.
I've only seen Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
I did watch that when it was on.
Okay, there you go. See, there's two of them. Yeah.
I liked them more than 30 Rock.
I'm trying to make a joke, and you know what? You just... No. All your opinions are invalid.
I liked them more than 30 Rock when I was in high school. For some dumb reason.
So, Gina, where can we find your work?
My podcast is Kill by Kill. You can look it up on the podcast hosting app of your choice. And I write about old television at tuneintonight.wordpress.com.
Did you put the review for Where's Rodney yet?
What's that?
Did you put up the review for Where's Rodney?
Yeah, I did. Where's Rodney? But it was a couple weeks ago.
Okay. I haven't. Joel, you have to see that pilot. It's incredible.
You keep trying to make me watch TV shows. It's just not going to happen, man.
It's a failed pilot where Rodney Dangerfield is like a guardian angel or something of this teenage boy.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's the dumbest concept for a sitcom. But
so it's a prequel to Little Nicky?
No, he's not in hell or anything. I mean, he's not even dead. It's just this.
He's himself, but this kid wishes he's there, and he'll just appear.
He can kind of he can summon him like a genie, except he doesn't really have any super. He doesn't really have any powers. He just gives advice.
So it's a sequel to Rover Dangerfield.
Yeah, except he's not a dog though either. He's himself.
I don't want to watch this.
It's something. And it got Baby Breckenmeyer in it, too.
Well, now I'm sold.
He's in, maybe 2 minutes.
Yeah, he has three lines of dialogue. And he wears a really, really boss bolo tie.
That's why they call it 2 minutes in heaven.
All right, you got other stuff, Gina, besides Rodney Dangerfield stuff and Kill by Kill?
No, that keeps me busy enough.
Okay. You're not going to do an Etsy store with, craft stuff?
I don't have the time management skills to open an Etsy store.
Okay. J-Dog, you got, a space podcast or something?
No, I don't have a space podcast. I do have a science fiction and fantasy movie podcast called Please Don't Send Me into Outer Space. Every week we watch a new movie and we talk about it. You know, we talk about popular stuff like Beetlejuice, Jurassic Park recently. And we also pick random movies because sometimes that's how you're going to get to the good stuff. So you see something like A Man Called Rage, which is an Italian Escape from L.A. Mad Max knockoff, which was hilarious, or Doppelganger, Zardoz.
Zardoz, a movie I actually really love.
Yeah. And I think I got a lot out of watching that movie, but that was randomly picked for us, so we wouldn't have watched it if that had come up, because none of us have seen it.
I was scared to listen to it because I love that movie so much.
I know. I hope we weren't too harsh on it.
No, not too harsh.
I mean, we have fun.
I know, but I really love that movie.
It comes out every Monday. You can get it on all the same places that you get your podcast from: iTunes, Stitcher, Google Music, that stuff.
All right. High and Low is the email: highandlowpod@gmail.com. And High and Low Pod, at High and Low Pod on Twitter. You can see us be a bunch of cowardly liberals where I just repost political stuff lately on our Twitter. So there's that. I write for Summer Knife Fight. This comes out in February. And so that's my review for February. I write for Summer Knife Fight. I do old TV shows like Twilight Zone, science fiction-y stuff, horror stuff. And I have a show where a bunch of people have superpowers and they go on stupid adventures. And Courtney Cox is in it, in her first starring role ever. And the guy who played a Predator is in it.
Absolutely no one else of note.
Dean Martin's son was in it. The one who died in a plane crash.
Yeah, the guy who played the Predator died too.
Yeah, half the cast is dead.
I think we've talked about a bunch of dead people this episode.
Yeah, this is the death episode.
Including David Carradine.
R.I.P.D.
He died enjoying it.
Thank you, Spencer. You're so sensitive. Martha Plimpton is going to listen to this and say, dude, that was harsh. That was really not necessary.
Martha, I really like Raising Hope. It's like Malcolm in the Middle, but actually good.
Martha, let us know if you want to be on the show.
Martha, I have not seen Goonies yet, but I might because you're in it.
No, Spencer. It's too late.
Yeah, no, don't. You're not going to like it.
If you didn't see it when you were a kid, don't watch it.
Oh, okay, Martha Plimpton, I'm not going to watch Goonies.
Your heart has already turned to stone. It's too late.
Maybe you can find like a compilation with just her scenes.
I'll watch her, the movie, the John Waters movie she did, Pecker.
There you go.
Yeah.
I have that on DVD.
All right. So, let's see. That's everything. Auf Wiedersehen, hashtag thug life.
Adios. Thank you for listening to us.
Bye.
Thanks, Gina.
Thank you.
Same.